This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Hi, folks. This is Bob Main. Welcome to another episode of your middle of the week MSP podcast here on the Handgun World podcast. This is MSP number 11. This is your host, Bob Main. Well, normally Ben Branham does the middle of the week shows. He is on vacation. So, you got me. However, it's not just me. You guys probably hear enough of me every week. It's kind of refreshing. You know, it's kind of refreshing for me to listen to Ben in the middle of the week, because I get to listen to somebody else on my own show. That's kind of cool. Anyway, I interviewed Glenn Tate, and we're going to talk some more about survival and prepping. Now, if you remember a few weeks back, I did the episode called 299 Days, which was an interview with Glenn, and he talked about his book, and he talked about some things that we can all think about. Well, I enjoyed it. The response was good, and so I asked him to come back for part two. You're going to love this. You know, due to what's going on in the country and in the world right now, I think common sense preparation, common sense survival, no tinfoil hat stuff. I think that's very important. So I asked Glenn to come back and talk about what he thinks that we should be all doing to take greater responsibility. It was a good conversation. I'm a firm believer in personal responsibility, and I'm going to go ahead and set this interview up by saying I believe that when people take greater responsibility, that's the only change that's going to take effect in people's lives. Voting for a new government is not going to help us that much. Obviously, we've just realized that. And for those of you who think that the government that you just voted in, if you think that your lives are going to improve because you now have new politicians in government, I'm sorry. I got to be a realist with you. I think you're going to be sadly disappointed in what you get from government. That's just my opinion. It boils down to personal responsibility, and I'm 100% believer in that. So Glenn Tate joins me again to talk some more, not just about his book, but how to get prepared. Common sense preparedness. Stay tuned. Well, back on the show again is Glenn Tate for part number two. How's it going, Glenn?
It's going great. Thanks for having me on, Bob. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Your book is selling well. I want to first of all extend a thank you to all the listeners out there who have been purchasing your book, and looks like quite a few copies have been sold since our last interview.
Yeah, actually, it's been very surprising for me. I didn't do this to make money. I did this to get a message out, and I've been absolutely astounded by the results. Last time I checked, there were 91 reviews on Amazon of book one and 60 or 70 of book two. And, of course, if one person takes the time to review it, that means many, many others are out there reading it. The reviews are almost entirely five-star, and that's just very, very gratifying. So it was a thing I wanted to do and get a message out, but now it's been, I think, a commercial success too, which is just astounding and welcomed.
Well, you know, there's an old saying that if you perform a good service and you're sincere and you're energetic about it, the money is going to be there, whether you do it for the money or not. And that's kind of the way that I approach this podcast. You know, I want to do a good service, get a message out. If the money's there, great. If it's not, it's not. But congratulations. Your message seems to be playing very well.
Yeah, I think so, and I think it was well-received before the election, and I'm not trying to dive into a political discussion. I know that Handgun World is not a political podcast, and by the way, I appreciate that as a listener. But I think after the election, it's even more of a message that needs to get out there about prepping, common sense prepping, and all of that. So if anything, you know, we expect the book to do even better as far as sales go. And books three and four of the 10 book series are coming out either a few hours before or a few hours after you post this this episode. So there'll be new books out there too, and I think there'll be a new round of folks being introduced to the series and getting books 3 and 4, and then perhaps going back and getting 1 and 2, or maybe getting 1, 2, and 3, 4 at the same time. So again, with the political climate out there as a backdrop, a lot of people are thinking to themselves, my goodness, you know, things could get pretty bad get worse, I guess would be a better way of putting it. And what am I going to do about it? What's my plan? What am I going to do for my family? And I don't want to flip out and be irrational and go do crazy things. I mean, how can you do this rationally? And lo and behold, there's a few books out there that describe exactly how to do it and how others have done it.
Yeah, well, and I think what you're experiencing there is you're experiencing a lot of people that are waking up. And a lot of people are saying, hey, you know, this could really get kind of bad. And I try not to be a conspiracy theorist. And I know that, you know, your book is very common sense. And I have some specific questions I want to ask you, Glenn. But you know what? I just thought of something. There might be some people who are just now tuning in for the first time, because I do get new listeners from time to time. So why don't you take about 2 minutes before we dive into some of the questions and explain to them what 299 days is about and kind of give a brief synopsis.
You bet. 299 days is about me, in a sense. The main character is really me, and I was a regular old suburban guy. I had country boy roots. I kind of lost my country boy skills when I became a suburban guy, and got lazy and fat and apathetic, and then realized about 2008, as things were falling apart, you know, in the economy and the political system, that something bad was coming. I work in government, and more precisely, I observe government for a living. I live in the state capital of Washington, Olympia, Washington, and I get to see the government at work, and I get to be involved and observe things that other people don't get to see, and I realize very quickly that this system was going to collapse. It was a question of when, and it was a question of how nasty and how hard the collapse would be. So I started preparing. I have a reluctant spouse, although she's come quite a way, and I'm very proud of her on that. And so that's the beginning part of it. It's this person looking around and seeing things and deciding what to do. That's really book one. The later books involve me and the main character, I guess, going out to a bug out location and with a group of guys and family and building up a community. That's where books 3 and 4 are going to take folks, is the building up of a community and how they take care of each other and get ready for bad things. And then the future books involve a political collapse in the United States, and I'll put it vaguely, some good guys and some bad guys squaring off and trying to fix things. So that's what it's about: prepping and a collapse, and how to fix things in a rational way, not in a, you know, scary comic book, you know, horror movie kind of way.
Yeah, well, that's good, and thanks for that synopsis. You know, since the last time we talked, obviously we've had the election, and without going political, because I do like to try to keep this show as free from politics as I can, and by the way, what I mean by that, I try to keep this show free from political opinions. I like to talk about just what is actually going on, you know, because I think if you talk to 100 different people, you're probably going to get 50 or 60 different answers as to how to politically fix the situation. But what's going on right now, I think you can probably agree, and I want you to speak to this, and I think it's actually been going on long before this past election, or even before the election of 2008, we are headed in a direction that is absolutely 100% unsustainable. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Not only have I seen things that prove to me that it's unsustainable, I've had conversations with high-ranking, at least state elected officials, and they admit that it's unsustainable. And as I mentioned in part one of our interview, a friend of mine is a pretty high-ranking guy, and he's a prepper too. And the reason he's a prepper is that, you know, he knows what's coming. So absolutely, unsustainable is the one word that describes it. You don't need to get into politics parties this, candidates that. You don't need to get into that because I think the one word that resonates is unsustainable. It's completely unsustainable. I think we saw the tipping point. There's been a long discussion about when do we hit the tipping point where more than half the people who vote get something from the government. And we talked about this last time. We would exclude veterans, by the way, from that whole getting free stuff analysis. But where's that tipping point? And when people realize that they can vote themselves free stuff, well, that tipping point was November 6th, 2012. Any way you look at the results, that's what I think it says. And so that's where we're at. If anything, the detailed events that I write about, you know, and I guess look at in the future in the book and predict are not only coming true, I see the timetable accelerated a little bit. It's exactly what I write about, exactly what I foresee. So there it is. A lot of people in this country are dependent in one form or another. Now, a lot of people aren't dependent. I mean, it was a very close election when you look at the popular vote. So there's still tons and tons of really good people, really independent, hardworking people out there. I don't mean to, you know, be one-sided or pessimistic or gloomy or anything. But see, that's a real problem. I alluded to this when I told you about the book earlier, Good Guys and Bad Guys Going at It. About half the country wants to basically work hard and keep what's theirs, and about the other half of the country, to one degree or another, is looking to government for stuff. You've set up a pretty bad political mix that we've not had in this country ever. And so that's how I see the results, and it's accelerated things. Let me put it that way.
Well, I totally agree with you. And I think we are at a situation now where with this sharp 50-50 divide, I think we are going to see some challenges come up with the not only the divided government, but the divided people that we have in this country. And I'm going to ask you a question here in a minute, but I think I want to set this question up. And that is, what would you suggest that people do who have actually maybe never prepared before? You know, a lot of people who carry guns, they carry guns because they like to prepare. If people have been a prepper for a long time, obviously they saw this type of thing coming from long ago. What would you say to somebody, what should they start to do right now if they're just now waking up and say, you know what, I got to take some personal responsibility?
Yeah, that is a great question. And a lot of people ask me this. The first thing I think is mindset. People need to get their minds around the fact that America is not and will not in the future be like it's always been. Everything you've known, your childhood, your teen years, your early 20s and 30s, all of that is going to change. It has been changing, but it's going to change even more. This is not to say that there will be zombies and cannibals and we'll all be scavenging for a grain of, you know, a kernel of corn or something like that.
No.
But understand that the old way is indeed the old way, and you can't keep looking back to the past and comparing everything that you encounter against what you've known in the past and then be disappointed. What do you mean there's not a gazillion items of fresh fruit in the supermarket at a really cheap price? Because that's the way it's always been. I'm going to go cry about the fact that I can't get papayas for 99 cents. I mean, forget all that. So mindset's the first thing. The second thing you need to do is inform yourself, and by that I mean go to common sense sources of information. I think, you know, your podcast would be one of them. There are some others out there. You can tell the kooky survival and prepping places from the common sense ones, and there's a bunch of good ones, and you know what they all are, and people can find it. I'll let people find it on their own. The third thing I think you need to do, if at all possible, is get buy-in from your family, maybe a spouse, maybe your kids. I mean, people have all kinds of different family situations. That's something I say, if possible. And as described in the book, and really throughout all 10 books, if you're, this is my situation, if your spouse isn't buying in, you need to do this anyway. In my case, I'm obviously a man. I believe it's my job to take care of things to the best of my ability, and when I see something looming on the horizon that's bad, I need to, within the bounds of reason, do what needs to be done to take care of it. So I say get the family on board, but don't let that be an excuse not to do anything. And you might have to do bunch of prepping in secret, which, you know, is described at length in the book, and there are ways to do that. A fourth thing to do, start thinking about food and water. Don't forget the water, by the way. That's the thing. You know, you can live 3 days without water, but you can live 30 days without food. So remember food and water preparation and storage. You can start slowly, build up your stores. You can just buy a little bit extra of what you normally eat, things that, store well, you know, canned foods and things like that. And a fifth thing would be firearms and training, not just guns. I mean, I see people walk into Cabela's and buy $2,000 ARs, and, you know, I have the feeling that, they get dust on them because they're never, they don't take them out and shoot them because they've spent all their money on a $2,000 rifle and they don't have any money for ammunition. And training is absolutely critical, absolutely critical. And then a sixth thing, if you can swing it, would be, I think, some precious metals. I'm not a financial advisor, but it would be maybe a good idea. Prices maybe are high right now. I don't know, but it would be a good thing to think about. So those are six things to kind of ease yourself into this and do it the right way.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that. There's a couple of things that you mentioned that I want to key in on. Number one, you mentioned precious metals, and the other is you mentioned not looking to the past. Let me take the first one, first of all. My wife and I are actually right now reevaluating our whole financial investment portfolio now that we've had these results. And I think purchasing more precious metals is going to be something that we're going to do. We're kind of analyzing how much, which ones, where to get it from. But one thing I'll tell people is precious metals like gold and silver, if they devalue at all, which I don't think they will, but if they do, I certainly don't think they're going to devalue to the rate that the U.S. dollar will devalue.
Exactly, exactly. Gold and silver are a store of value. They hold on to value, and the price may go up and down a little bit, but you're right. And I would think people might want to put, you know, a portion, probably not all, but a portion of what they have into precious metals. And don't listen to financial advisors. Sometimes they'll tell you not to have any gold or silver, and they'll perhaps laugh at you. Maybe it's time to get a new financial advisor. Or you can go and buy silver pretty easily, you know, coins and all of that. Not collector's coins, but junk coins, you know, they call them, and that sort of thing. And something, I like silver because it's something you can do with small increments of money over time. I'm not suggesting anybody, you know, go and sell their house or something like that and try to buy as many bricks of gold as possible. Again, you know, moderation and rationality and all of that goes into the precious metal category. And by the way, I'm semi-joking but semi-serious. A precious metal that I've invested in is ammunition. I consider it to be a precious metal, and wouldn't be a bad idea. Already now, I'm seeing that some ammunition is getting a little bit hard to find and the prices are high. And that's another thing that, number one, never goes down in value. When was the last time, you know, you went to buy ammunition and you said, golly, this is so much cheaper than the last time I was here? It stores forever and it's tradable. And if you're like me and you shoot a lot, you'll end up using it recreationally. If everything is great and wonderful, gee, I have a couple years of fun in some ammo cans. I mean, that's not a bad thing. There's no downside to buying ammunition.
No, there isn't. There's no downside. It's not going to go down in value. I 100% agree with you on that. And even if you don't use it to have fun, you can look at it this way. It could also be a good bartering tool at some point in the future.
Yeah, all these guns that a lot of folks have, obviously people listening handgun podcasts, you know, own firearms. I know this goes without saying, but it needs to be said. Guns only work with ammunition.
That's right.
And you'll use a lot more than you think. When was the last time you went to a training thing and somebody said, bring 250 rounds of ammunition, and you bring 250 rounds of ammunition and you think to yourself, golly, I wish I would have brought 500. I mean, there's something about ammunition that you just use more than you think you would.
Well, anybody that's come to one of my training classes knows that we normally make you shoot more than what we advertise because, you know, you're there, you're paying us money to learn something, so we're going to make you shoot. I never looked at ammunition as a precious metal, but I'm kind of glad you brought that up because that's good. It's probably not going to go down in value, especially now with the political climate out there. And if you don't mind, I want to kind of roll back about 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes ago. You said something that I think was very important. You said we have to quit looking at the past, and we have to quit complaining and whining that America is no longer the way that we once knew it. See, I'm so glad you said that. I've always said that I'm not a conspiracy theorist. I'm a realist. I like to engage in reality. I like to say every morning when I get up, okay, this is the way it is. What am I going to do about it? And I think there's a positive message that we can all take from what's going on right now. The positive message is, and I want you to speak to this, Glenn, the positive message is, so far, our personal responsibility freedoms have not been taken away from us. And we have the ability to go ahead and choose to live life the way we want to live it on our own terms at this point. Nobody is coming to you and saying, you have to be dependent, you have to live a certain way. I think a lot of people listening to this might think, oh my gosh, guess what? Some freedoms are being taken away from us. Okay, I get that. I get that. Yes, some freedoms are being taken away. But I think the one freedom that's not being taken away right now, and I hope it never does, is for you who are listening to this podcast to make a decision, you're not going to live that way anymore. And when I say that way, you don't have to be dependent on anybody for anything right now. Would you agree?
Absolutely. And that's why when you ask what can people do, the first thing I said was mindset. And what you just described about people realizing they are free and they can be free. It's practical and possible to be free. That's the thing. It's not some theoretical thing in some textbook or written in the Federalist Papers or something. Being free and living free is not only practical and doable, it's way better than the alternative. I've been the suburban slug on the couch, and I've been now a free guy running around, having a great time, being, you know, very active in life, and being very free, and there's no comparison. But you can't look at the past. You can't count on things that were there in the past. Look at all these people in the wake of Hurricane Sandy that thought that, you know, well, the government's always been there. The power's always on. You can't count on those things. What would make people think that life would be exactly like it was in the past? My goodness. I mean, if you thought that, think back to 30 years ago. There were no computers. There were no cell phones to speak of. Life changes and goes on. And normalcy bias is what they call it when people look back and expect everything to be like it was in the past. And they shoehorn the current reality, and they try to shoehorn it into what they think normal should be, and it gets people killed. People will, I think, when there's a big collapse, people will still perhaps go to work because they think they ought to, because their alarm clock goes off and they think they need to just drive into work, because what would people say if they didn't go to work? And they might be a victim of crime on the way in. People, when there are no semis running, as I believe will happen, or very few semis, I should be more accurate, people will still go to McDonald's. They'll still go to the drive-thru. They'll still order the number 7 and they'll supersize it. And they'll be surprised when there's a little sign up that says, we're closed. So normalcy bias can get you killed in a tactical, practical sense, but in a strategic, long-term sense, longing for the past just does you no good. I've gone through a lot of changes, as I've alluded to, since 2008, and you know, prepping and my family's on board. I have a bug out location. I've, you know, published 10 books, for goodness sakes. A lot of changes. And if you look back, you're not going to get forward. You're not going to go forward by looking back. So it's the key to all of this. It's the starting point.
Ooh, I like what you just said. You're not going to move forward by looking back. You know, I want to tell people right now, listen to this, you know, get over it. Please, get over it. For some of you, for the 50% of you in this country that voted a certain way, and I'll put my hand up in the air. I'll go ahead and I'll admit it. I don't mind saying publicly right now, I voted for Mitt Romney. I don't mind admitting that, okay? Because guess what? I was proud to vote for Mitt Romney. But I got to tell you what, it didn't work out. My side didn't win. I'm not going to sit and cry. I'm not going to be upset. I'm not going to be down in the dumps. I'm not going to cry for the next 15 years that America is not the way I want it to be. I still have personal responsibility, and I think that's the biggest reason I wanted to get you back on here, is because, you know, I want you and I to convey the message that I still have personal responsibility. You know what? Here's what I think, and I want you to address this, Glenn. I think people who know what they're doing, people who are smart, that use their brain, that accept personal responsibility, I think they're going to continue to thrive. A lot of people say, oh, guess what? We have this widening gap. The rich get richer, the poor get poorer. Those who have get more, and those who have not don't. You know what? I think that gap is going to get even wider. I think the people who have are going to get even more because they know how to get stuff and how to provide for themselves. And I think those who don't know how, I think it's going to get worse for them. What do you think?
Absolutely true. And I'm an example of this. And here's how I can illustrate this. My traditional work income, what I call my day job, right? My regular job, my white collar job, that income has gone down. So do I cry and boohoo? No. What I've done, I sat down and wrote 3,200 pages that became 10 books that got published. And so actually, family income wise, making more money now. And also, the guys in my book that I talk about, the team who are all real, we provide tactical shooting instruction. Now, it's here in Western Washington, so it's not any sort of national thing or anything. You need to be around here because we don't travel and all of that. So when you look at it, I kind of have three jobs now, a regular job and two part-time jobs, and I'm doing exactly what I love. I'll tell you, Bob, there's nothing better. Saturday morning, we're teaching a class, for example. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to be on the range all day. I'm going to be teaching folks. I learn every time at one of these classes, and I'm around guns. I'm around these amazing friends of mine. The guys on my team are 20 years younger than I am, which means that I have to keep on my game. I have to work out a bunch just to, you know, not have them yell at me and tease me about being the old man. So here I am. I'm living a much fuller life. I'm making more money. And it's because I didn't sit around and keep looking at the past. I dealt head on with the facts that confronted me, and I came up with ways to enjoy myself and to, as it turns out, to my surprise, actually have a bit more money. So there you go. That's a classic example of taking bad facts, not crying about it, and thinking, what am I going to do, and doing it.
Well, you know, you and I have a lot of similarities. Most people listening to this show know that I'm doing firearms training on the side now. It's not my full-time job, but I'm just like you. I have two jobs now. I have my sales position, which I absolutely love, and I can't never see myself doing anything different than what I'm doing right now. Sales and marketing has been in my blood since I got out of college. It's what I want to do. But my hobby now has become somewhat of a part-time job, and it's just a heck of a lot of fun. And you know, I haven't suffered at all. I got to tell you, it's been a bad 4 years for a lot of people. I have not, because I've been prepping for more than that. I've been prepping for 6 or 7 years. And one of the ways that I prep, kind of like you, Glenn, is I believe in having multiple sources of income. And I'd like people listening to this to really think about, what is it that you can do? What kind of talent do you have that you can turn into an extra income? Because I think today, more than ever, developing an extra income is vitally important.
Absolutely. And if there is a big collapse, or as I talk about in the book, a partial collapse, that's what I foresee. You know, utilities still running for a very interesting reason that you have to read about to find out why. But utilities still running. There's law and order in many parts of the country. That sort of thing, but the economy completely tanks. If that scenario happens, my regular day job will go away, certainly, but I am affiliated with a group of guys, experienced guys, who can teach people how to shoot. We all have ARs in .22, and we all have pistols in .22 and holsters, and they mimic our regular setups. So we can train people, and we have an absolute ton of .22 long rifle. That's intentional. if we need to, we can roll people through classes and train them with 22s because regular ammunition would be at an amazing premium. And we can do that and some barterable items and you know, take care of our families. So it's not just good for surviving in the sort of physical sense of the term, but also making it through in the economic or business sense of the term. And it's not planned. It's not like I want, as you were mentioning, it's not like I want my day job to go away. I like my day job. But if it goes away, I am way better off than, well, virtually anyone else, you know, I know around here, to actually have a viable way to take care of some things. And it's all because I didn't look at the past. I just addressed the reality of the present square on and came up with a reasonable plan. And I'm telling you, I'm no superhero. Believe me. I mean, trust me on this. If I can do this, anyone else can. It's absolutely doable. People need to do it. This isn't some luxury thing. This isn't, oh, I'd like to do this. Wouldn't that be cool? I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, it's time to either do it or if you are prepping, to step it up. And you need to.
You do. You need to. It's time to, you know, you said it earlier. It's mindset. First of all, get the mindset. The mindset is I'm going to prep. And, you know, not just talking about guns and ammunition, but food storage, water storage, medical supplies, financial prepping. I think more than ever right now, you know, get your finances in order. You know, my wife and I have lived debt-free for, let's see, since 2006. So, since the summer of 2006, so a little over 6 years, thanks to Dave Ramsey, we took his program, we took his Financial Peace University course, a life-changing experience. We've been living debt-free. I got to tell you, you know, there is no better way to sleep at night, no better way to sleep at night than to be debt-free. I don't care if you have 5 years worth of food. I don't care if you have 6 months worth of water. I don't care if you have 50,000 rounds of ammunition. If you go to bed every night with a debt hanging over your head, it's no fun. And I would say, The biggest personal responsibility that somebody could take right now would be to try to get rid of, I mean, just absolutely get radical, as Dave Ramsey says, get radical about erasing debt as fast as you can.
Yeah, and I went through that too, and that was part of the transformation. And not only is it something that you can, you know, use to sleep better at night, your life's way better. Instead of doing things that are empty and expensive, you end up doing things that are real and cheaper. I mean, there's no downside. There's no downside at all. And we're going to get to a point very quickly where people are not going to have the choice. A credit crunch, I don't mean to get into economics, a credit crunch is coming. Inflation is coming. There are all kinds of things that are going to make this let's go to Applebee's and go to a movie and buy a boat that we don't need and a big screen TV and let's all put it on a credit card, it's going to be impossible. It's currently a bad idea. It's going to be impossible. So why not just deal with that reality and start saying to yourself, do we need all this goofy stuff? Try it. That's the other thing. I mean, anytime people suggest you make a big change in your life, I'm usually skeptical, but try it. Test it out. See how it works for you. Do a little bit. And see if you sleep better. See if you miss all the stuff that you think you need. And when you find out that you don't miss it and that you don't need it, you're going to hit the accelerator and do even better and sleep even better. So well, it's, yeah.
Yeah, let me give people an example of that. You know, a lot of people know that I do this podcast when I'm driving around in my car. Not today. Today I'm sitting in a hotel room talking to you. But a lot of times I'm driving around in my car. Well, I drive an 11-year-old Honda Accord with 121,000 miles on it. It doesn't look pretty, but it runs and it gets me around. You know, would I like to be driving something new? Yes. But guess what? It's the worst place I could put my money. Buying a new car is the absolute worst possible investment. Throw your money down the toilet because that's exactly what you're doing. That's just my opinion. Some people might disagree with me on that, but it's a sacrifice I make. It's a sacrifice I make. And you know what? I can't find any example where I've lost one single customer in my sales job because he didn't like my car.
Exactly. Boy, we are similar. I have a 12-year-old car. I call it in the book because it's the nickname that my guys gave it, the Tacura, the Tactical Acura. See, they're mocking me, right? Because I'm the old guy. The Tacura has 210,000 miles, and I'm happy as a clam. I'm going to keep driving it for a while. At some point, I think I need a pickup truck, but I'm working on that.
Me too.
And absolutely. And you mentioned, for business. Oh my goodness, you need it for business purposes. I've had exactly one time where somebody from my business world needed to ride with me, and I needed to have a quote normal car, and exactly one in 12 years. So all these things we're told that we need to have cars for business and everything. Maybe you do, but I thought I did, and turns out to not be true.
Well, you know what? My wife has a normal car, okay? Her car is 5 years newer than mine. And, so if I need a normal car, hers is also paid for. If I need a normal car, then I drive hers. I switch keys with her in the morning, and I say, honey, you get the old Honda, I get the newer Honda, and away I go. But the thing is, folks, you got to resist buying stuff you really don't need. Put it to the needs test. Ask yourself these days, is it something I really need? I'll tell you what, I would trade, and I'll borrow this from Dave Ramsey. I'll give him the credit. The paid-off house has taken the place of the BMW as America's status symbol.
Yep.
And that's, that's the kind of prepping. So shifting gears for a minute, Glenn, what do you think now? Let's try to do this without getting extremely political, but what do you think is going to happen? And give an approximate time of when you think it's going to happen.
Oh, right out of the gate, I have to say my estimates of time have always been off, and I no longer put time frames on anything because it'll just erode my credibility.
All right, well, that's fine. That's okay.
Yeah, soon is what I think. I could see it being days or a matter of years. I don't think decades is likely. I think let me put it this way. I will give a bit of a hint because this thought keeps reoccurring to me, and that is, as I was watching the election returns of 2012, I kept thinking, I have a weird feeling that we're not going to be seeing something similar in 2016. I don't know. Maybe there aren't 50 states in the Electoral College. I don't know what. Maybe I don't know what it is. I'm not saying they cancel elections and martial law. I'm not saying anything crazy like that. But I don't know. Just the next 4 years, I see a lot of bad things happening. So that would be a rough time frame. But as far as what I foresee, the national debt will continue to go up. Inflation will start to take off. A lot of people, including me, have wondered why, with all the printing of money, the electronic creation of money, more precise, but anyway, the making of money out of thin air, why haven't we seen inflation? And it's a great question. There's this thing about velocity of inflation, and I won't bore people with it, but basically it takes a while to work its way through the system. And currently, prices are being kept down because there's not a lot of economic activity. There's not a lot of buying, so you've got that. So we'll see big inflation. It's funny. I was talking to a friend of mine who's one of the real characters in the book, a guy named Rich Gentry. That's his character name. You'll be reading about him in books 3 and 4.
Okay.
He's a police officer who was fired because he uncovered corruption at his police department, and he's out there in the book, at least, out of the community. But I was talking to him, and I was talking about inflation going up, and he said, dude, inflation's already gone up. And we started recounting how much more things cost, gas, food, all kinds of things. And he said to me, I remember 10 years ago when I got paid and had $100, man, that was a lot of money and it lasted me this. And he described all the stuff he could do with $100. And now he says, sometimes I have $100 and, it's gone and I didn't really realize. So we are having inflation, but I mean big inflation. Politically, and I don't mean politically, but I mean government spending-wise, there's no way to keep the spending up. The spending gets cut significantly. I just wonder what happens when a lot of the benefits out there are cut, and or there's inflation that goes up, so your same amount of benefits buys you half as much. I think that could be a spark, especially in urban areas, that could be, just really touch things off. So I see that. I see a lot of interesting political stuff that we haven't seen before. I think there's going to be a lot of people that quit paying their taxes. There'll be a tax protest movement. There'll be, you know, marches and rallies and that sort of thing. We're going to, I think, hear at least discussion, probably not action, but discussion about states maybe, quote, opting out, as I describe it in the book. Opting out seems a lot better than the evil word secession. I don't know that states will necessarily, but it's going to be a topic that you're going to hear about and that you've never sort of heard regular people on the news talking about. So I see that. And then I see, you know, pensions. We're going to have to get our arms around this, especially with, you know, public employee pensions. They're going to fight like heck when, you know, there's an announcement that the benefits are going down. So taxes will go up significantly, no matter how you slice it. Fees and those sorts of things will go up. I'm seeing local governments now, some of them, and remember, I'm in Western Washington, in this the state capital of Washington, where, my goodness, it's one of the most left-wing places in the United States of America. And local governments, so this may not be true elsewhere, local governments are creating fees and they're requiring licenses for everything, and they're just, you know, you build a kid builds a treehouse out here and they get a stop work order and a $600 fine and that sort of thing. So it'll be a lot of that. So that's what I foresee. I don't think there'll be a big dramatic event as I've described in the past where you turn on the news and it's got a banner scrolling across the bottom that says the United States of America has just collapsed. I don't think you're going to see that. There will probably be a big event. I think it would be a massive currency devaluation. I think it would be the Chinese saying that they're selling their U.S. Bonds because they don't expect them to return on their investment, which of course would create a massive sell-off. There will be a big event that we'll look back, and that'll be sort of the day that the collapse started. But it's really already started, and we're going to see all these things build up to that. And then once there's, I believe, a currency collapse, could be terrorism too, by the way. I hope that doesn't happen. But that's the other thing about about this is that look at history. It's a pretty well-proven tactic throughout world history, and most countries have done this, I guess, that when your enemy is down on its luck, that's the time to start causing additional problems for your enemy. And it would be relatively easy for bad guys with very little resources to do a variety of things. I'm not going to list them off because, quite honestly, I don't want to give anyone any ideas. But anyway, there are a lot of things that could be done if the U.S. was struggling even more than it's currently struggling to put us over the edge. So that's the wild card in all of this. So there you go. That's how I foresee all this unfolding. It's a little vague in general, but it's the best I can do. People that come up with precise dates and other things are probably trying to sell you, you know, something that you probably shouldn't buy. So that's not me.
Yeah. Hey, that's good stuff. Glenn, can we take a 5-minute pause? I got to take care of some business. I have to do a profit timeout because I'm actually working at the same time I'm talking to you. So I'll call you back in 5 minutes and then we'll pick up where we left off.
Sounds great.
Okay.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and other listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit gunrightsradio.com and click on the forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership. GunRightsRadio.com.
Okay, Glenn, back with you. Sorry, I had to take a profit timeout. I actually just sent an email over to a customer, and we confirmed a $9,000 order, so that was worth the break.
Excellent. Yeah, you have to do that. You have to do that. That's right. You have taxes to pay, Bob. You need to make money.
Yeah, and I'm going to have more taxes to pay here within the next couple years, too. So I got to pay into the system so all those people who are voting for their stuff can get it.
That's right. It's your obligation.
Oh, gosh. A bit of sarcasm there. Sorry, folks. But anyway, you know, since we're kind of on that subject, there's going to come a point in time. You referenced this about 5 or 6 minutes ago. There's going to come a point in time where the stuff is going to quit coming. And I think a lot of people don't realize that right now. I think America has indeed changed. I think people need to realize that we now have what I call a minority majority. And what I mean by that is the minority majority means that what once was the minority of people, the people who were dependent and wanted stuff, they are now the majority.
Exactly right. And I know you know this, but I want to make sure that others get this. When you're speaking of minority, you don't mean racial minority. You mean population chunk of people who are getting things. I understand exactly what you mean.
Exactly, exactly. Let me clarify. I do not mean racial minority. I'll say that again. The minority of people who wanted stuff from the government is now the majority of the voters out there. That's the thing, is that they once were the minority. They once were, what, 20, 25%, maybe 30% of the people. And the government was actually able to sustain the benefits for them. Now that small percentage of the minority people, again, not racial minority, but the small percentage of the people who were dependent, now they have become the majority of the number of people who go to the polls to make decisions.
Exactly right. Exactly right. You know, without giving too much away about what I do for a living, I was having a conversation in the run-up to this current election and poring over some polling data. And somebody said, well, this is just like the idea that Romney was going to win. He was down in the polls and the media was against him and everything. And this person said, well, this is just like Ronald Reagan in 1980. And, you know, Reagan was down in the polls up until late October in 1980. And I said, you guys, the voting population of this country is not like it was in 1980. And that's exactly what you're talking about. That's another reason to not look back at the past and try to shoehorn everything that you've known into the current reality. And yet, when you talk about the former minority number of people becoming now the majority when it comes to dependents, you know, I'm going to say something that's perhaps a little unpopular, but it's what I observe at my job. This idea of dependents isn't just sort of, you know, people on welfare and everything. There are all kinds of shades and variations of dependence on government. It might be people that sell things to government. And are they bad people? No. Are they selling a product? Yeah, it's fine. But I mean, there's all kinds of different types of dependency. So we need to make sure that, you know, again, don't think in the past where dependency meant somebody who's been on welfare their entire life. That's not the only kind of dependency we're talking about. We've now seen that tipping point. Obviously, 50-plus percent of people who voted in the 2012 election were not on welfare.
No.
That's just, you know, and so it's not just that kind of thing. And it's when people have this stake in things continuing and them getting things that you're going to see all this. And one of the things that I think is going to be different is that people like you and I who are not dependent and don't want anyone else to be, because it's a terrible way to live. It's actually the humanitarian thing to do to try to get people off of dependence. But anyway, people like us are going to increasingly not tolerate it. And I think that you're going to see things like, you know, polite people like me, for example, in a grocery store line. And if I see somebody ahead of me buying a bunch of junk food with an EBT card and they're all, you know, manicured and they've got clothes way nicer than me and, you know, they got a car way nicer than mine, I might say something like, you're welcome. And, you know, that's a little rude of me to say, I guess, but I'm starting to think in my head about, you know, at least, I guess what it is it's the Tom Gresham no shrug policy. You know about that, where he says he's no longer going to shrug when somebody says, you know, all guns need to be outlawed because guns kill people. And he used to just shrug and be polite, and he's not shrugging anymore. Well, when it comes to this dependency thing and people basically taking money from me, I'm not going to shrug anymore. Now, I'm not going to burn anybody's house down or anything crazy like that, but I'm just going to not tolerate it as much. And I think that'll be an interesting kind of social ripple to see that go through society.
Very good point. That's a good point. Well, Glenn, as we wrap this up, I want to wrap this up in about 5 minutes, but I want to tell people real quickly, if you want to get Glenn's book, 299 Days, including the new releases that are coming out shortly, if you go to my website, you're going to see a link that says Recommended Books. I'll say that again. There's a page on my website called Recommended Books, and you can buy Glenn's book through Amazon. It'll help out my show. I have an Amazon Associates program, so it'll help me out. So go to my website, go to Recommended Books, and get that. And the last thing I want to have you address is, where do we go from here?
Yeah, great question. Great question. I think about this a lot because I really care about this country and I really want things to be fixed, and I'm sort of in the business of fixing things. Let me put it that way. So, big sigh, right? I used to have a lot more answers, and after the election results in 2012, I have fewer answers. I used to think up until last week that we could still, on the margins, do a few things here and a few things there. I don't think that as much anymore because I'm extremely disappointed at my fellow countrymen, and you don't even know how much it pains me to say that. I love America. I love Americans, and for the first time, I had some real evidence on election night that 50.1% of them want stuff from me and are willing to use the government to take it from me, and that was a heartbreak. I described it on my Facebook page as I'm having a bit of a trial separation from America, and here's what I mean by that. America was always good to me. We had a good thing going. Loved America. And now America has essentially cheated on me. And that's how I view it, when most people out there are using this amazing country, the amazing liberties that we have, to get free stuff. And it feels like cheating. So I want to reconcile with America, but I'm not counting on it happening. And so what do we do? That's the emotional background. And I'm not one of these people that approaches problem solving from first saying, let me tell you about my feelings. Believe me, that's not my style, but it's an important thing because it's been such a change. So where do we go from here? First thing that comes to mind is individuals.
Yes.
We talked about that, Bob. I mean, we have to, as individuals, we have to get out of debt. We have to prepare. We have to start getting our families on board. We have to do all the things we've talked about. And then we start going out from there, maybe friends and neighbors. I mentioned, you know, the team. I have some prepper friends where we have networks where we can, you know, support each other. We have EMTs. We have, you know, all kinds of – we have communications people. We have all kinds of people with skills that are really good, decent, cool people. So you start moving out from there. Then I think you just – I don't know. You keep your head down and you do the best you can, because I don't know that this is fixable in one big fell swoop. I mean, it's not like we can elect one person and $16.8 trillion gets wiped out overnight. So that, again, is the old thinking, that we can just elect somebody and everything will be okay. Just yourself and your family and those around you, and I don't know that the big picture is fixable. Now, that isn't as pessimistic as it sounds, because I think this partial collapse will happen, as I've described, and I think things will get fixed, because as unsustainable as the current system is, a partially or fully collapsed America is completely unsustainable. We are the most amazing people on the face of the earth. We prove it every single day. We will come back from this and create something better. And so that's the long-term hope in all of this.
Well, that's a good point. That's a very good point, and I'm glad you brought that up. And I want to echo your answer, and then we'll wrap this up. You know, don't lose hope, folks. You know, you still have your own personal responsibility that you can rely on. And this notion that the government is going to take care of you, you don't have to live that way. You do not have to say that I'm going to let the government take care of me. The other thing you don't have to do is, and you touched on this, Glenn, those of you listening to this show, you do not have to, well, let me put that back. You have to quit thinking that voting for a change of government is going to change the status of you in this country. The only thing that is going to change this country is when people start to take personal responsibility for themselves. I'm 100% believer in that, and I've been saying that for a long time. When you decide that you are now going to take care of you. And you still have the freedom to do that. You still have the ability to do that. And you still have the skill level to do that. Once you've made that decision, then you're going to be okay. I pity the people that do not change their mindset, as you alluded to in the beginning of this show. I pity the people that still say, well, I don't really think I need to prepare and take personal responsibility because it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
That's what I pity. I pity those people.
I know, and they're friends of mine, some of my dearest friends, lifelong friends, fit in that category, and I don't think I have enough stuff to help them out. They need to do it on their own. They got where they are in life by working hard and doing things and taking risk and doing what they need to do. They need to apply that to this new reality.
Ooh, and that's a good note to end on. You just said, as a matter of fact, I think that's going to be the name of this show, New Reality. I think that's going to be what this is all about. We do have a new reality. Thank you, Glenn. You kind of set it up there in two words better than I could say it. We have a new reality. Now let's deal with it.
Exactly right, Bob. Exactly right.
Well, good. Folks, his name's Glenn Tate, the author of the book, 299 Days, several versions of it now. Once again, go to my website, go to Recommended Books, get your copy. Glenn, thanks for the time. Thanks for coming back on the show.
My pleasure. Always, always fun, Bob.
Isn't that good stuff? Many thanks, Glenn. I appreciate you coming on. Once again, if you want to get his book and even some of the new copies of his book, go to handgunworld.com. That's www.handgunworld.com. I have set up a complete page called Recommended Books. Go to the Recommended Books page, and you can find a link where you can buy it directly off of Amazon. Proceeds will help support my show through the Amazon Associates program that I'm a member of. I'd appreciate it if you would help out my show by doing that. By the way, speaking of helping out my show, if you like the work that Ben and I do on this podcast, please become a member of the Shooters Club. I am going to be posting two more audio podcasts by the end of this month. There's a new video that Ben and I just put up there. It's really an excellent education. It's an annual membership. I'm donating $5 per person that joins back to the Gun Rights Radio Network. Folks, you know, if you can't make it to one of our training classes, which are becoming pretty popular, and many thanks to you, I'm very flattered. You know, every single time somebody signs up for one of our training classes, I'm flattered that the people really think enough of our classes. It really means so much. And, you know, Ben and I put our heart and soul into it. We give everything we've got, everything that we know. We're constantly learning more. And I think you're just going to be excellent beneficiaries. But I understand that it's kind of tough for some of you to come to Texas to train with us. And we can't go out to all parts of the country. It's just not economically feasible right now. So we decided to put a lot of our training on video and on audio. And I've got some good guests that also join me on the audio podcast. So if you like what you hear on this podcast, $50 a year per year, not per month, $50 per year, a little over $4 a month, you can get the audio podcasts, and we've got a special page for that. For $75 a year, you can have an audio and video membership. Now, folks, that's only slightly below the cost of one box of ammo per month. And I'm thinking 9mm. If you're buying 40 or 45, it's about the price of half a box of ammo per month is what that averages out to. $75 a year, you can have access to all of our video content and audio content, and I have some special announcements. This is really cool for me to announce. On February 1st, I am going to be giving away two training classes to the Shooters Club members. One of them is to Roger Phillips' point shooting class. Roger Phillips with Suarez International. He's coming to San Antonio. I'm the host of the class. Roger's the instructor. April 6th and 7th. That's April 6th and 7th in San Antonio at Cedar Ridge Range. Point shooting progressions. Phenomenal class. Normal price is $400. You could be a winner
of that class. I'm going to do a random drawing. Everybody who's a member of the Shooters Club, everybody who has signed up for an annual membership. So if you've signed up for an annual membership since late September when we launched the program, you're going to be eligible on February 1st to win a ticket to Roger's class, Point Shooting Progressions. Also, I'm going to give away one free ticket to the classes that me and Ben teach called Beyond Concealed Carry. That's a one-day class. If you go to handgunworld.com and look at the Beyond Concealed Carry page, you're going to see all kinds of excellent reviews from people who have been through our class. Once again, we're very flattered. So we're probably going to give away a slot in a class coming up, probably, I would say, in March or in May. I'm not quite sure yet. In March or in May. All right, so two winners. I might have a third surprise. Let me confirm that by next week's podcast, I'll probably be able to announce something else special for Shooters Club members. So again, if you want to join that, go to handgunworld.com, click the Shooters Club podcast page, and you'll see a link in the show notes too. Speaking of show notes, you're also going to see a link. If you can't quite find where to buy Glenn's book, just look at the MSP 11 post and you will see notes where it'll send you straight to that link. All right, that's it. Get prepared, folks. Take personal responsibility. The time is coming, I really believe, when you're going to need those preparations. With that said, thanks for listening to the Middle of the Week Modern Self-Protection Podcast. Normally with your host, Ben Branham. I filled in for him today. Shoot straight, shoot safe. And I'm going to go ahead and sign off like Ben does. Remember that your guns and knives are only tools. Your mind is the weapon. Train it well. Talk to you later. Goodbye.